20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can get all your Pack-A-Day updates by following us on Twitter at Pack-A-Day Podcast. And remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Spotify. And, of course, you can always check us out at CheeseheadTV.com. I'm Kyle Fellows, and I'm joined by my co-host, Andrew Mertig. Andrew, welcome back to another Friday show. How the heck are you?
I am doing phenomenal. I could go on forever about how close we are getting to the draft, but we have a guest with us today, so I will let you introduce him, and I'm really excited about what we have in store for today.
Yeah, we are super excited to be joined by Ben Solak of the Draft Network. Ben has been doing great work for a long time and produces a ton of great content on the NFL Draft. He's also an editor at Bleeding Green Nation, a Philadelphia Eagles blog. And like I said, we're just super excited to have Ben joining us today on the pod. So welcome, Ben, to the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Oh, thanks, Kyle. I appreciate it. I'll be the first to talk about how excited we are because we're close to the draft. I'll take Andrew's job for him. Hi, I'm very excited.
We are too. And people may or may not know that, Ben, you stepped into the spotlight a few weeks ago when Adam Schefter, like the Adam Schefter, not even a fake account.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Retweeted your article on Washington right tackle Caleb McGarry. So, Ben, you have to tell us, how does it feel to have something that you wrote retweeted by Adam Schefter?
Oh, man, I called my mom. I was like, hey, Mom. Adam Schefter retweeted me, and she was like, who's that? And I said, yeah, I should have foreseen this coming. not the right person to call. No, it was just super sick. It was cool. Adam Schefter retweeting it was cool. I had the problem where, like, right around when the Eagles were in the playoffs this year, our podcast for BGN Radio was, like, really highly ranked, which was really exciting. There was a ton of listeners, and we were above Adam Schefter's podcast. And so I, like, you know, this was ages ago, I, like, added Adam Schefter, and I was like, ha, suck it, like, you know, deal with it. Adam Schefter's hands are tight, like, you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, shit, I should probably get rid of those now. But I still have them. They still have them. Because, like, you know, whatever. He's obviously not going to see it. But, that was cool, but what was really cool was just the people, like the people who followed me for a while, the people who always read my stuff, who were so excited for me. Like, that was, you know, like, obviously Adam retweeting is cool, but I've never even met Adam. Like, the people who, like, you know, followed for a while, like, being proud for me and proud with me was really cool. So, yeah, that was a nice little feather in my cap for what's been a really fun NFL draft season.
That's awesome, man. I remember I tweeted at you right after that, and I was like, dude, just remember that you agreed to come on the Pack-A-Day podcast.
Yeah, man, no.
Before you got famous. So, but yeah, we appreciate you telling us what that's like. Maybe someday in the future we'll get to experience that, but we won't hold our breath. So congrats, man. But Ben's article on Caleb McGarry is really good, so make sure you check that one out. And we're going to talk about McGarry a little bit later, but Ben definitely knows what he's talking about when it comes to offensive line prospects in general. And so that's why he's here with us today, to help us get a better understanding of these O-line prospects in the draft and to talk about how the Packers could improve their pass blocking and run blocking by taking advantage of some of the prospects who are available in this draft class. So let's start right at the top of the draft. Jawan Taylor is someone that most consider to be the best tackle prospect in the draft, but he spent at least the majority of his time at right tackle, which is a little bit odd for a top prospect. The Packers don't need a right tackle right now, but they could next year if Green Bay were to move on from Brian Bulaga. So what is it about Jawan Taylor that makes him a special prospect?
Yeah, Jawan Taylor, man, really weird come up. Usually it doesn't take till the end of the season to figure out that an offensive tackle prospect is really good. Like, usually that's something that you get pretty cleanly. And this was a sensation, something that we had happen for multiple Florida prospects because the coaching there, Will Muschamp, it was just so bad. It was just, there was such poor development of these players. Though you saw, like, safety Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, another one, potential first-round player. You know, 2017 tape was rough. 2018 tape, he was clearly a much more motivated and technically advanced player. You could say the same for Ja'Kai Polite, the edge, who, you know, he comes through, obviously he's had a rough pre-draft process, but he really grew in his final season. So Jawan Taylor exploded, really, just in terms of his technique, how well he utilized his length into this season. He's not my offensive tackle one, but for those people who have him high, what you're excited about with Juwan Taylor is an incredible blend of length, like natural size, and then movement skills, right? Very nimble, very quick on his feet, but he has like the ideal requisite size that you expect him to be able to handle power at the offensive tackle position. And that blend is always going to put guys early. Like Colton Miller at UCLA did not have great tape, baby. But boy, if you're long and you're quick, teams will draft you to offensive tackle. And so that's what's going to make Taylor special. Now, he's a smart player. He knows what he's doing. He uses his leverage well. He's got good footwork. Right tackle, left tackle, not really much of a concern. You know what I mean? Like, this is if that's where he fits naturally best, where he fits naturally best. If he can swing for you and flip, that's all the more power to him. And so I think he absolutely has the traits of an NFL left tackle. If you work him out there and you know he'll be fine over there, then he'll be fine over there, and that's not a problem. Taylor's a real fun prospect.
Yeah, and the transitioning to a different tackle, the Packers historically are really picky about athletic testing, and that has not seemed to change under Brian Gutekunst. So we would probably assume they're going to pass on Jonah Williams, even though I think Kyle and I are in agreement that we both really like him as a prospect. Andre Dillard, however, has the athletic profile that's probably going to be really attractive to the Packers. So what are your thoughts on Andre Dillard as a potential tackle prospect, and would you consider possibly taking him at pick 12?
Yeah, I mean, Andre Dillard, it's interesting. For me, he's not a player that I would take at 12. He's not going to be a round one grade on my board. I'm not positive he's going to be a round two grade on my board. And the reality is, like, there's movement skills and there's natural athleticism, but the eight angles of offensive line play, like, offensive line movement is different than running back movement. It's not, like, natural, you know what I mean? Like, when you're in a kick slide, right, when you're, like, keeping tension inside in your groin and your thighs and your core, like, that's just, like, a different type of athleticism, the different types of requirement. You have to be technically sound in that regard. If you get all over the place, you know, if you lose that tensegrity, kind of what we call it, you're going to get knocked off your back. You're not going to be able to absorb power and re-anchor. You're going to lose balance. And I think that's something you see with Andre Dillard. He's a really nice natural athlete, and that covers up a lot of technical problems, but good rushers can put him in trouble. And the system at Washington State did a lot to protect him in terms of how quickly the ball came out, and vertical sets really appeal to Dillard's play style. It's a little passive. He has trouble being aggressive, and that's something he's going to have to learn, how to 45-degree set, how to jump set, how to initiate contact with his hands. And so there are gaps there that make me not want to take him at 12. Dillard, obviously, from the testing perspective, is the exact sort of guy that, listen, if your offensive line coach thinks he can bring him in and improve him, and Dillard's improvement, 2017 tape to 2018 tape, was great. Like, some people were excited about Dillard coming into this season. I was like, man, I can't get my head around this. This dude's technique is bad. He's really passive. He got a lot better in 2018 for sure. So if your offensive line coach says, hey, listen, bring me this kid, I can make something out of him, go for it. You know what I mean? But I think that, like, when we're talking about, obviously, you know, for any team, not necessarily the Packers, yeah, Jonah Williams, Cody Ford, Juwan Taylor, these are better players. For the Packers, if it's between Taylor and Dillard, Taylor's got to be the pick. If Dillard's in at 12, like you said, you may not need him this year, so it's nice to have that time to develop him, but he's going to need some work, that's for sure.
Definitely will be interesting to see if the Packers do pull the trigger on Dillard there at 12. He's the player that I'm most nervous that could be kind of the dark horse to be the pick that I'm not sure that I would be super excited about. But I do have to say that I think that this is the first time on this podcast that the tightness of the groin has ever been referenced. Is that true, Andrew?
I'll have to check our archives, but I'm pretty sure.
Pretty sure that's the first time. So thanks for bringing that to the podcast today, Ben. We want to talk a little bit about Dalton Risner. And for a long time, you know, we love the draft simulator you guys have over at thedraftnetwork.com. For a long time, Dalton Risner was someone who was almost always available at the Packers pick at number 30 overall. But the last couple of weeks, it seems like Risner has almost always been gone by the 30th selection. So do you think Risner is someone that could go higher than people are thinking? And what kind of prospect do you see overall in Dalton Risner?
Yeah, no. So the mock draft simulator runs off of our predictive board, and our predictive board is built exclusively for the simulator. You know, just like, you know, flat ranking the players where we think they're going to go, putting Risner obviously where we think he'll best fit. And Risner did move up a couple weeks ago because, you know, we at the Draft Network, we talk to a lot of people, and obviously we read everything else that everybody else puts out, and we just try to do our best to slot these guys. Risner is a potential end of the first round target for a lot of teams. And the reality is that while Risner's not the most agile dude, he's not the best mover, there are quickness concerns with him. He's nasty as heck. And real old school style football guys really, really like that in their offensive linemen. His versatility, ability to play four, if not five, positions on the offensive line is also huge. If you're a rebuilding team, Dalton Risner is one of the best first-round picks you can make. It's almost impossible he won't start somewhere. He can play left guard, center, right guard, right tackle, and, you know, left tackle in a pinch probably. So that aspect is really pushing him up into the bottom of the first round. Fun tape to watch, though. You can see the weaknesses. Really fun guy to talk to. Talked with him at the Senior Bowl. He's totally nuts. He's completely crazy. And that's, again, like, off the line, like, that's what you want. Like, you know, you want a guy who's just, like, off his rocker, nuts. For the Packers, like, I could definitely see it because I think there's an interior offensive line need as well. And like I said, Risner's versatility is super cool. I would expect, you know, maybe not 30. I don't, what's their second round pick? Is it like
44?
Yeah. That sounds too early. I thought they're pick 12. Did they move up a little bit?
No, anyway. We got 12 and 44, and we got the 30 from the Saints last year. So
that's pretty sick. But either way, yeah. So 30, 44 is where I would be looking at Risner for them. And listen, if that's the pick, it makes a lot of sense. I guess it would be outside of athletic tendencies, but it would make sense.
Absolutely. And one player that I noticed that you had ranked higher than I typically see is David Edwards.
Yeah.
And since this is a Packers podcast, so while we do have a national and even international audience, there are a lot of people that listen that have ties to Wisconsin. And so some of our listeners will be familiar with Edwards as a former Badger. And I really like David Edwards, but having him ranked as high as you do was a little bit surprising. So can you tell me a little bit more about David Edwards and what you see in him as a prospect?
Yeah, man, I still believe. I don't know. Like, I was excited, real excited about him coming into 2018. There wasn't as much of a step forward as you wanted to see in terms of what he does in kind of like we talk about an edge rusher's first three steps, and like if an edge rusher can win in his first three steps, well, for an offensive tackle, like the first two kick slides are the same as the first three steps. Like, you have to be able to win, frame a guy, get a good leverage point in the first two kick slides. And besides that, off 2017 tape, Edwards was really exciting. And it was just his ability to drive off that inside foot, to not fall step, and to get depth of his first two kick slides. He said, all right, in 2018, if he solves this problem, we're good. And then he didn't. You're like, all right, well, what do we do now? To me, like, you know, testing wasn't super great at the combine, but I still see a plus athlete on tape. I see a guy who's definitely NFL athlete worthy at the tackle position. So I know I have that box checked. And I also see a guy who has not been playing the position for very long. Was a tight end convert to the tackle position, so wasn't really using that technique, wasn't gaining depth off the line. You know, tight ends, like, they might block, but they're never entering a kick slide the way that Edwards is, and that's the biggest problem on his film right now. So I see a guy with a developmental future. And when we're talking, like, Edwards and, like, you know, Edwards was getting some, like, Colton Miller sort of comparisons, and, like, you know, for the athleticism, he obviously didn't test that well. But when we're talking about, in my opinion, guys like Titus Howard, guys like Caleb McGarry, and guys like David Edwards, these are NFL caliber athletes at the position who really have some technical struggles. Round two, round three is where it makes sense for these guys, because the reality is colleges aren't churning out high quality offensive tackles. I think it was Steve Palazzolo of PFF who had this. He tweeted out recently, just like, listen, at any given time, there are five good tackles in college. And that's the truth. You know what I mean? Like this year, most of them are draft eligible. Don't know what's going to happen next year. Like there's aren't many good tackles playing at the college level. And so if you find guys who are NFL caliber athletes who at least have baseline technique, which Edwards, you know, has, everyone knows how to frame guys, knows how to throw a punch. You know, like the NFL is thirsting for starters at offensive tackle. And so Edwards might not be a guy who, you know, is reliable for you in year one. He might be a guy you'd prefer to sit and start year two. But he's got an NFL starter profile. And to me, at the tackle position, that puts you as a round two, round three grade. Like, it's not like wide receiver. It's not like running back. There's not a ton of bodies. So if you can potentially start, you're going to get a high grade from me.
Now, you just mentioned Caleb McGarry, and yeah. McGarry is someone who posted absolutely huge RAS numbers.
Oh, bananas.
And it's really, you know, we've just kind of heard these last couple of days that it sounds like the Packers spent some time with McGarry around his pro day at Washington, and it's been rumored that he may be one of the 30 visits that the Packers have lined up. We don't know that for sure, but it's been rumored. What is it that you like about Caleb McGarry, and maybe what are some of his challenges as a prospect? And if you had to guess, what round would you suggest that he get selected in?
Yeah, funny story about McGarry's testing. Obviously, so I wrote the piece on Caleb. I've talked with Caleb. I've stayed in touch. Wonderful dude. Real fun. And he was telling me some of the numbers he was hoping to hit. And I was like, I'm not going to share these because they're nuts. I was like, I'm sure. I was like, you got it, man. Like, go get them. In my head, I was like, that can't happen. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, he's 90th percentile or above and like broad jump, vertical jump, short shuttles, like some huge testing numbers. And so now I look like an idiot because I didn't share, like, you know, I didn't source them while I had them. But no, McGarry's explosiveness numbers are great. And we're talking about a guy who's a true 6'7". Weird arm length situation where he measured in with much shorter arms at the combine than he did the Senior Bowl. So I don't know super how long he is. Right. You know, he lost about a half an inch off his arm length at the combine, which has happened before. Like, it's because like the measurements like take it from a different place at the shoulder, like, mm-hmm. you know, the different sourcings. It's like usually scouts will just like take the average or they'll get a third measure or whatever. But it's funny because I talked with Caleb about it. He was so pissed. He was like, my arms, I haven't had 33 inch arms since like seventh grade. I was like, that's not true, but whatever. Fun guy. Right. On film, what you see for McGarry is a player who had, again, similar to Edwards, I kind of brought this up. He's threatened by depth. And so, you know, you at the snap, the first thing you need to do as an offensive tackle is gain depth. And you have to gain depth while staying square. You have to keep your hips square to the line. If you don't gain depth, you're going to lose the outside edge track. The edge rusher who's lined up way outside of you and is in a much better stance for being fast than you are is going to get to your outside shoulder. If you don't gain depth, then you have to swivel your hips, open your hips, go perpendicular to the line of scrimmage to deal with him. And that leaves you susceptible for inside moves. When McGarry loses, it's for that reason. If he's able to gain depth, or if he's able to take more aggressive sets, a jump set, if he's able to 45-degree set with more regularity, then he wins. So it's that ability to gain depth on the first two kick slides. And for a player of McGarry's explosiveness profile, of his height with really long legs, you expect him to be able to suss that out. And so McGarry is a potential late first, second round target. That's what we've been hearing from teams now, especially after the end of the combine. You look at a team like the Chargers at 28? The Chargers.
I think it's 28.
Yeah, Chargers late 20s. That's a team that has had eyes on McGarry for a little bit. And so that's where you would expect to see him go. The length, the strength profile, it's all there. We have to handle his ability to deal with depth to get to his set points. Listen, good offensive line coaches. I mean, we talked about this with Dante Scarnecchia, Mike Munchak now in Denver, over with me in Philadelphia, and Jeff Stoutland. Good offensive line coaches can do wonders with these athletes. They can really improve them just in 1 year. And if you can fix a guy like McGarry, you can get him a little bit more depth out of that kick slide, we're cooking with grease.
So we've been talking about tackles, and the Packers probably are going to be looking for somebody to replace Brian Bulaga in the next year or two. But the Packers did address guard in free agency when they signed Billy Turner. He'll probably be slotted in at right guard. Lane Taylor's been steady, but probably not spectacular at the left guard position. And he is somebody the Packers could look to move on from after 2019 because he would free up about $5 million in cap space. So the Packers could be looking for some help at guard. I would think it's safe to assume that most people think they'll address guard pretty early. But if they waited until the middle rounds of the draft, are there some athletic guards that you like for an outside zone scheme on day two or maybe early day three?
No, absolutely. And this is an interior offensive line class that I have liked for a little bit, and I'm excited about it. And I'm still up there with them. Now, we go immediately to Wisconsin. Michael Dieter is the guy that you're looking at on day two of your interior offensive line. Offensive tackle swing capacity, you know, so many straight starts with the Badgers, 44, something like that. Like, these are just checking huge benchmarks for things that traditional evaluators and offensive line coaches love in prospects. Dieter's a really, really strong, technically sound player. If we stick with good offensive lines, it's Drew Samia and Ben Powers. Now, they didn't run a ton of zone at Oklahoma. Oklahoma likes to run the power concepts. Both guys are heavy hitters. But Samia, definitely a plus athlete. I feel like he can execute zone well. Ben Powers, functional athlete, average athlete. Not going to be your best mover, going to give you some issues on outside zone, but still, I think, a strong contender on day two. Samia is going to be drafted before Powers. Powers is a potential round three sort of a guy. The last name that I would say that really excites me and interests me, though he's probably more of a center, is Elton Jenkins, and that's the player out of Mississippi State. Really nice length, great recovery ability, one of the better tapes you'll see against Quinn and Williams this year. And that means he only lost like 10 times, not 20. You know what I mean? Like, it's not pretty, but he survived and he was able to recover a lot, has some good flexibility to him. He, I think, is more natural at the pivot. I think he's a center moving forward. But if you're willing to try him out at guard, he's also a fit there as well. So the Wisconsin and Dieter I like a lot. The two Oklahoma kids and Drew Simeon, Ben Powers, and Elton Jenkins out of Mississippi State.
Interesting. We were talking to Joe Marino a few weeks ago, and Drew Simeon.
Joe doesn't like Elton, right? Oh, Drew Simeon. Okay, I thought you were from Elton.
No, we didn't talk about him at all. But we talked about Drew Simeon a little bit, and said that he was someone that he really likes. And I noticed that you're actually higher on Simeon than I think even Joe. So,
he's a good player.
What round did you think that he could potentially go in?
I think he goes in round two.
Okay. And the reality,
the thing is with Simeon is. We're talking about a very good offensive line. Joe Moore Award winner, 4 draft picks on it coming out this year, and their center, whose name I'm going to remember because it's a cool name, Creed Humphrey, dude's going to go early when he comes out. I mean, he started as a freshman. It was amazing. On that line, Samia was the tone setter, right? Like Cody Ford is super nasty, but Samia is filthy. Samia's his anger, his physicality is really, really impressive, and that's something that – offensive line coaches love, like I said, but also translates. Like there's a competitiveness there that you have to play in the trenches in the NFL. You have to be a bit of a dog. I really like Samia. I think if we're talking about Eric McCoy and Garrett Bradbury being the two interior offensive linemen who go round one, I think Chris Lindstrom, Michael Dieter, and Drew Samia are your next guys in round two. That's what makes sense to me.
Wow.
And so the moving in from guard to center, the Packers are pretty set with Corey Linsley. But you just mentioned Eric McCoy, and then you also have North Carolina State's Garrett Bradbury, I think are both pretty interesting prospects. In the middle, are those players you would consider selecting to play guard at all?
Yeah, tricky, man. I mean, like Garrett Bradbury, I don't want to take him out of the center because of what he can do there in terms of his explosive ability, his quickness, his agility. Allows him to execute plays from the center, which is the most typically uncovered offensive lineman, right? Like you're not seeing a lot of zero techs at the NFL level anymore. And then obviously you have your 1-3 technique, but you're more often seeing like 2-3 techniques, 2-2 techniques in terms of the fronts that we're seeing in the NFL. Bradbury uncovered means he gets to play laterally. He gets to execute reach blocks and he's elite at that level. You know, we talk about the Jason Kelce comparison. So I want to keep him at center. I don't want to move him to guard. Eric McCoy, on the other hand, is a tremendous player. Another like kind of late guy who was a late addition, late declaration who was a junior, really, really surprisingly good, strong tape there. Now his size is definitely better than Bradbury's. He's got about 15, 20 pounds on him. He's a guy I think could make the guard transition very nicely. Super smart player, great at center, calls out protections very well for A&M. But I think, absolutely, he could execute playing a guard a little better, better functional power, better anchor, that sort of stuff than Bradbury. So McCoy, yes. Bradbury, I'm not so sure.
That's super interesting, and that's the best explanation I've ever been given of why you wouldn't want to cover up Garrett Bradbury and why he may want to stay at center. So I appreciate you you telling us a little bit about that.
Right, and the reality is, you don't have to have the smallest guy at center. Like, that's not, the simple way it goes. But what Bradbury can do from center – like his strengths, his elite ability translates best to center. And so you could probably play him at guard and sleep at night, and he would still execute reach blocks. Guards have to reach block. It's not exclusive to centers. But because of the defenses you'll typically see, especially running wide zone, the sort of fronts the teams are going to give you against wide zone, you're just not going to see a lot of nose tackles. And so it makes sense for Bradbury to be there. You protect him from his great weakness, his anchor against pure power. It just the fit makes a little more sense in my head.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Hey, before we let you go, Ben, why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit more about the Draft Network and maybe some of the work that you guys have been doing over there lately?
Oh, yeah. Really lucky, fortunate, and excited to be a part of the Draft Network. It's been a blast. This is our first year on the circuit, our first year establishing things. We're very excited. We had a big announcement recently. We'll be down in Nashville for all 3 days of the draft. Producing our live show will be live on Twitter at Draft Network LLC is the spot. We're really excited about the level of analysis that we can give. Feel like we have some advantages over the ESPN, ABC crew. I won't name all of them. One of them is that we watch tape. The other ones don't matter. But that's the big one. And we actually have another exciting announcement about that coming out within the next few days. So stay tuned for that. But that's a big one. We also have, and this was alluded to with Dalton Reisner, the mock draft machine and the build your own big board interfaces, two really cool tools that allow you to simulate the draft, that allow you to build your own big boards and positional rankings. And those are all linked to our scouting report. So if you don't know a player, you want to learn more about a player, where we have him, all the scouting reports are available to you. There's over 1,000 reports on the site for over 400 players. So we're really pumped about the library, about the database. And then obviously it's content every day. I mean, you guys both know the grind. It's just getting out as much content as you can when you're in season. And for us, you know, this is the time of the year. So we have a ton of fun. We've got our two podcasts, Locked On NFL Draft and Draft Dudes. We've got the live shows coming up. It's a good time to be alive, man.
That's awesome, man. And we will definitely look forward to hearing what your announcement is about what's coming up in Nashville. Looking forward to following you guys and just helping us stay up to speed as we get ready for the draft. But we do want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on the Pack-A-Day podcast. You can follow Ben on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. He really is an awesome follow for anyone who wants great content leading up to the NFL draft. And we've really enjoyed our conversation with you today, Ben. So thanks so much for coming on the show and join us here on the Pack-A-Day podcast.
No, thanks, fellas. I appreciate y'all having me on.
But that is all the time we have for today. This has been the Pack-A-Day podcast. You can find Kyle on Twitter at Packer_pundit. And you can find me at Andrew Mertig. Remember to also follow the at Pack-A-Day podcast. Please subscribe and rate the podcast if you like what we're doing. Tomorrow's episode is going to be hosted by Mike and Tyler, and they're going to be taking a look at some of the Wisconsin Badger prospects in the upcoming draft. You can catch Kyle and myself every single Friday. We're going to be back next week with coverage of the NFL draft and an in-depth look at inside linebacker. Thanks for listening. And as always, remember... Go, hey, go!
From the 16 of New York, first down, goal to go. Rodgers in the shotgun, Williams to his left, here's the snap. Rodgers, clean pocket, throws the middle of the end zone. And a dagger! They beat Morris Claiborne to the back line of the end zone. The Packers have won it.
Snap to Wild.
Oh, yes! And taken by Jackson in the end zone for a touchdown.
Geronimo
it was
Allison.
By Geronimo Allison. Josh Jackson, the rookie, recovers in the end zone in a Lambeau leap to the north end zone stand. The Packers have a 6-0 lead.
Pepperd on third down and three in the shotgun. Packers showing a blitz, and here they come. Pepperd looking, hit as he throws it. Deep down the right sideline, and intercepted on the play. Spectacular interception by Kevin King at the 9-yard line of Green Bay.
Snap to Rodgers, looking right. Throws the right side. St. Brown makes the catch and saves the 38 out.
Oh, he reached back to gather it in, using all 6'5 of his frame. Tumbled out of bounds inside the 30 of the 28-yard line. Hunter Bradley the snap. J.K. Scott down on one knee, arm extended. Here it is. Placement made. Kick is up.
It is good. It is good.
Mason Crosby delivers the dagger. One week after his worst day ever, he delivers the dagger tonight.
Third and five, 13-yard line of Atlanta. Snap, Ryan looks right, close, right down.
Intercepted to the house for Sean Freeland. Touchdown, Green Bay Packers.
19-yard interception return, and it's 16-7 Packers.
And Rodgers looks it over. Takes the snap. Blitz on. They pick it up. Love
they got him. They got him. 40 yards.
Single back off. That's behind Aaron Rodgers, who ducks it under center. From the 29 of Green Bay, and here's the handoff. Up the middle.
Big hole. Straight ahead. Here's Aaron Jones. Off to the races. To the 20. To the 15. To the 10. Down the left sideline. And he's out of bounds. Inside the 10 of the 5-yard line of Miami. Aaron Jones with a first. 67 yards.